Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
We look at them every time we watch a game, and they are important yet somewhat in the background of our focus. The football field markings are everywhere on the playing surface, but what are they used for and where did they come from? We hope to give you these answers today and fill that football brain of yours with great knowledge of the gridiron. This and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we welcome the SportsHistoryNetwork.com crowd, too, because we have some great sports history to talk about on the lines of the football field, the markings of this field. Now, you see these things all the time, and you don't realize what you're looking at. Sure, you recognize, okay, there's a 10-yard line, there's a goal line, there's a 50-yard line, there's a sideline. But where did these things come from, and what do they really mean in the game of football? We're going to try to give you those answers and more as we go and talk about the field markings of the game of American football. Well, probably the most prominent and decorative field marks are found in and around the end zones. The goal line itself is one of the earliest field markings, as it goes back to the roots of soccer and rugby. According to the great historian Park H. Davis in his 1911 transcript, Football, the Intercollegiate Game, the Spartans played their game called Harpiston, which was played on a rectangular field that had, get this, two sidelines, two goal lines, and a center line. Sound familiar? Records are not real clear on just how these lines were marked, but we can imagine they probably varied from the lines etched into the turf to some crushed stone or sand deposits to boundary monuments to identify these lines, like a pole or a rock or something. And these lines throughout history in all the games that came thereafter, you know, we're talking soccer and lacrosse and football and rugby, were field boundaries identifying where the playing surface was and where it ended. The center line was used for different purposes, but most notably had the same basic meaning it has in today's gridiron games, to set the field into two hemispheres, one for each team to call their own and to defend. The end zone was not officially identified in football until a 1912 rule, which was college football at the time, added a 10-yard deep end zone at each end protruding past the goal line, which would have suggested making the fields an extra 20 yards longer beyond the area inside the goal lines. Since the size would not fit in many of the college stadiums, because remember they had 110-yard fields at the time, they had already been built, it was decided to make the American football field to be 100 yards from goal line to goal line, with another 20 yards spared for the end zones. Thus, a basic size of the field was created for the modern game. Now, they didn't have the same problem in Canada. They didn't have all these stadiums built up there at that time. So in Canada, they've kept their fields at 110 yards long from goal to goal and added a 20-yard deep end zone, much deeper end zone than we have here in the States. Now, our next line we're going to talk about is the yard line. In 1882, lines were installed on the field at every 5 yards between the goal lines, parallel to the goal lines, to aid with the rules of the game. After all, when Walter Camp introduced the elements of scrimmage and down and distance, he needed to have some aids for the officials and everyone else to know where at on the field they were to start and where they had to go to achieve a first down, you know, the line to gain. So they didn't have the fancy line to gain equipment we have today. So they almost had to say, okay, you're starting at this line and you have to go 10 10 yards, or whatever their line to gain was at that time. These lines were expanded to go from goal line to goal line, too, in photos from 1903 to 1911, as the college rules makers were desperately trying to tame the game down to excessive injuries and deaths, raising public outcry to get rid of the game altogether. So, in this era of the football field is fondly known as the checkerboard years. Yeah, there's crisscross lines in big 5-yard squares all the way around. The crisscross lines formed a grid pattern, and soon the name gridiron was coined to describe the look of the field. The credit of the game being called gridiron is credited to a 1911 article in Outdoor Sport and Games magazine by Claude H. Miller. The original purpose of the extra lines were for penalty enforcement based on how far away an offense was to the ball carrier. These lines eventually faded away, and later rule revisions did give ways to the hash marks and the 9-yard marks were the tops of the numbers, which were used in 1933. Now, speaking of the hash mark, that was a 1933 rule that had a big impact on the game of football. The rule added the hash marks, even though they weren't called them at that time, to the playing surface. Prior to 1933, when a runner was tackled near the sideline, or even when they went out of bounds, the ball would be spotted where they were downed or extremely close to the sideline. There are many instances recorded in football history where the snapper was the closest offensive player to the sideline. You know, just his foot was like barely in bounds and the ball was maybe a yard inside the line. Imagine that. He made it pretty evident where the offense would have to run their next play to. They'd have to go to the wide side of the field. So defenses understood the dilemma of their counterparts, and they set their formations up to defend the side away from the sideline with more than their 11 players to the larger area of the field than the other. You know, they had more people to defend more area. The old way of spotting the ball caused other complications as well, such as the kicking game for obvious reasons. Can you imagine trying to kick a field goal if you're 1 yard from the sideline? I invite you to check out an excellent article wrote by Timothy Brown on the Fields of Friendly Strife website in 2018. And he's also got a great book out where he talks quite a bit about this. And there's some great interviews, 2-part series that the football history dude on Sports History Network did with the author Timothy Brown, and his Fields of Friendly Strife book and his other book, Where Football Came From. So make sure you check those out. We have the links on our site. The 1933 Spalding official NCAA rulebook guide, which I have a copy of, states that there must be short lines on each of the lines parallel to the goal line that intersect perpendicular. These, of course, would later be known as hash marks. Later in 1933, the rulebook says that if the play ends out of bounds or closer than 10 yards from either sideline, then the next play will be snapped at a point 10 yards from the closest sideline indicated by the short perpendicular lines in the field. These would later be called the hash marks. So yeah, 10 yards in from the sideline, short little line perpendicular to the 5-yard line, the 10-yard line, the 15, the 20, all the way up to the 15 and down the other end of the field. Both sides of the field with inside 10 yards. Now, the hash marks were later moved to be to where they are today. In the NFL, they're as wide as the goalposts are. In high school and college, they're a little bit wider, so the ball where the ball can start is a little bit wider in the field, of the middle of the field. But they are all used for the same purpose. The hash marks are where the ball is spotted the next time it goes outside of the hash marks. Now, the numbers that are on the field, the big markings with the 40s and the big bold ones most fields have in these days, they have a couple of functions. The obvious one is they indicate which 10-yard increment or 5-yard increment they're stationed on. It leaves little to wonder when the ball is placed on a line that has a giant 40 written on it with an arrow pointing out in a couple of places. However, the numbers have another more hidden purpose as well. The tops of the numbers on most fields are positioned to be exactly 9 yards from the sideline. And these are also referred to as the 9-yard marks. It's important for substitution rules at most levels. To clearly be a legal player, one of the 11 on offense, you have to have all players to have been inside the 9-yard marks after the ready for play signal by the referee and before the snap. If they do not have to line up in this area, but they do have to physically enter it, and then they can exit right back out. And either by going into the huddle or simply stepping inside the boundary and then going out to a position outside the numbers. They can also go in motion or shift to become legal by rule. This prevents the old player from coming off the bench and standing there by the sideline next to his team box, unnoticed by the defense, to gain a deceptive advantage and having an uncovered eligible receiver. So hopefully all that makes crystal clear of these lines and where they came from. So we talked about the hash marks and the sidelines, the center field line, the goal lines, the end lines, which are where the end zone ends, and the hash marks and the 9-yard marks were the tops of the numbers. So hopefully that makes it all much clearer for you. We filled your football brain with more knowledge. Check out the links that we have on Pigskin Dispatch for this great field marking this podcast and blog post that we have here. We can come back and talk about this anytime with you. Also, if you have any questions, email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and make sure you check out sportshistorynetwork.com and all the great articles we have on pigskindispatch.com in the game of football. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings you sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of you unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.